reflect the views and opinions of News Talk 1450 WOL, Radio 1 Incorporated, or their management.
Welcome to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. I am your host, Attorney Ethel Mitchell. Welcome to all who are listening live throughout the world on Radio 1 Station 1450 AM, WOLDCNews.com, and LawTalkWithEthelMitchell.com. We have a great program planned for you today on discrimination cases in employment, and especially among members of the armed forces. So listen up and learn about information that can really protect and benefit you or your loved ones. This program is brought to you by my sponsor, Equity Resources, and by my law office, Wills and Trust LLC, where I prepare wills, trust, and power of attorneys. If you or someone you know needs a will, a trust, or assistance administering an estate, give me a call at 202-772-1988. 202-772-1988. Law is powerful. It can help you or it can hurt you. It impacts everything you do. What you don't know can hurt you. What you do know can empower you. So each week, Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell brings you lawyers and other professionals to share their knowledge and expertise to empower you. But please remember, what you hear on this program is for information purposes only. No attorney-client relationship is established by anything said on the program. Each person's circumstances are different, and you must seek individual counsel for any situation for which you need legal advice. All of our programs are archived on LawTalkWithEthelMitchell.com. So if you missed a program or wanted to listen to it again, go to LawTalkWithEthelMitchell.com and click on the archive button, and you can listen to the program there. My executive producer is back with me today. Thank you very much, Stacy. And my Radio 1 engineer, Daryl Farley. They are both ready to receive your calls. So please join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-450-7876. That's 1-800-450-7876. So let's get started today. Unfortunately, the issues of discrimination continue to plague our nation. Workers have rights which should be protected. Expert attorney Peter Romer Freeman will help us to explore employment discrimination cases, particularly with military personnel. He will also discuss the recent Supreme Court's decision to uphold disparate impact claims under the Fair Housing Act. But first, let me tell you about this outstanding attorney. Peter Romer Freeman is Deputy Director of Litigation with the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Urban Affairs, where he litigates and supervises cases in all of the committee's practice area. We heard Rod Boggs here, who is the director of the Washington Lawyers Committee. We've also had Barbara Arwine, who until recently was the director of the National Lawyers Committee. We've had Tanya Clay House on. So this is an outstanding group of lawyers who bring groundbreaking legal cases. They work with major law firms all around the country who donate legal services for major groundbreaking litigation that a lot of people don't even know about. So I am pleased to be able to showcase what they do. And this young man in particular has had an outstanding career and continues to have an outstanding career. Now, Peter is also developing two new areas of focus for the community, or for the committee rather, on veterans' rights and LGBT rights. He is a graduate of the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor, where he earned a BA in economics with honors and social science, cum laude, and was a recipient of the National Harry S. Truman Scholarship for Public Service. During college, he co-founded and served as a board member of the Worker Rights Consortium, a nonprofit organization that monitors labor rights in apparel factories worldwide. He is a graduate of my law school, I want to say, Columbia Law School, where he was a James Kitt Scholar and a Harlan Fishstone Scholar, served as managing editor of the Columbia Journal of Law and Social Problems, and was an extern to the Honorable Judge Sarah Schindlin, U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York. Before joining the Washington Lawyers Committee just recently, in May of this year, he worked as a civil rights and employment attorney at the firm of Cohen, Milstein, Sellers, and Toll, PLLC, where he litigated dozens of class and impact cases on behalf of individuals and civil rights organizations. And I want to, this is a little longer than usual, but I think my audience needs to understand what an outstanding attorney he is. He has been the lead or co-lead counsel in actions that have secured more than $1.35 billion, that's billion with a B, in monetary relief and important programmatic changes, including one of the largest reported veterans employment class action settlements ever. That was a $6.1 million settlement in the case known as Tooten versus United Airlines. He was also involved in one of the largest credit discrimination class action settlements, $760 million, brought by Native American farmers and ranchers in Keeps Eagle versus Vilsack. He was also involved in two major fair housing settlements, a $62 million settlement over racial discrimination in post-Katrina federally funded home rebuilding programs. So this young man is really, really an outstanding attorney, and I am very, very pleased to have him on my program. He also, and I just need to put this in for my listeners to understand the depth of his experience, he worked with Senator Edward Kennedy on labor, education, and pension legislation as well. So welcome, Peter. I am very pleased to have you as a guest on Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. Welcome.
Thank you, Ethel. Thanks for that really wonderful introduction. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for your service and your work that you have been doing and you continue to do on behalf of so many people, and what you're doing impacts so many people throughout the country, and it's just outstanding. So thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Tell us a little bit first about the Washington Lawyers Committee.
Sure.
I know we've had Rod Boggs on the show, but tell us what that organization does.
Sure. Well, you've heard from Rod Boggs, who has been the executive director of the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights for over 40 years.
And another Columbia Law grad.
Yes. Wonderful tradition of Columbia Law School grads who have pursued civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lawyers Committee here in Washington was started in 1968, which is a time when there was a tremendous amount of upheaval and difficulty in terms of racial and other issues in our country that led the president and civil rights leaders to come together and to talk about how we would collectively approach the issue of civil rights and how we would bring in legal minds and leaders to help with the issue of racial justice throughout the country. And as a result, mm-hmm. the Washington Lawyers Committee and other lawyers committees were formed to provide pro bono legal services to help people with lots of different struggles, whether it's employment.
And that means free legal services.
That is free legal services. And for over 40 years now, we've been taking up that struggle in employment, in fair housing, in disability rights, in immigrant rights. We have a wonderful prisoners' rights project as well that's made some national headlines recently for some groundbreaking cases that they've brought. And I think over time, the what we view as the mission of the Lawyers Committee has continued to expand, because the folks at the Lawyers Committee see justice in a broad way and want to bring more and more people under that banner of justice. And that's part of what I'm helping to do in coming to the Lawyers Committee to take on the LGBT rights and the veterans projects, is to make sure that we use our resources and our time to help everyone. We, of course, still work on a lot of cases that go to the heart of the founding of the Lawyers Committee. We work on a lot of racial justice issues, including some that have made some headlines in this area, very recently.
Oh, very good. Very good. Now, let's go to veterans, because that's kind of dear to my heart. And it was very disturbing when you told me about some of the things that have been happening to the young men and women who are going into the military. First, tell us, what does the law have to say about rights that civilian workers have when they go to serve in the military? What, if any, rights do people who, now we have a volunteer army, if you volunteer to serve in the military, what are your rights vis-a-vis employment when you go into the military?
Sure. So since the 1940s, there's been a law that's been called lots of different things, and today it's called the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act of 1994, or we call it USERRA. And USERRA and its predecessor laws for a very, very long period of time have allowed civilian workers to answer the call of duty, to go serve their country, and return to their jobs, not just in the place that they were at, but into the place that they would have been if they had stayed at their workplace. So it's called the escalator principle. If you would have gotten raises or a promotion, you would be entitled to that raise or that promotion when you return, so that you're not hurt by serving your country. And it applies to both voluntary and involuntary service. So if you were called up after we started the war in Afghanistan or Iraq, and you were in the National Guard, and you were called to active duty, whether you wanted to go or not at that time, you'd be protected. But if you signed up, you joined active duty and went off for 3 or 4 years, and then let's say got injured and wanted to return to your job, you'd have still the same right to return to your job without any sort of harm. You're also entitled to the same benefits to be continued, and to including, for instance, pension benefits. If you go away for 4 years on active duty, they have to put the 401k money into your account, just as if you had stayed and worked.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Which is a wonderful thing. And it ensures that, particularly at a time right now, when we've had over 1 million men and women serve, come from the Guard and Reserve to serve in Iraq and Afghanistan and all over the world since 9/11, that we can have a voluntary military right now, but that we will assist the people who volunteer and who participate in the military to keep their jobs, put food on the table for their families, because at the end of the day, we can't have a voluntary military unless people can be assured that they'll be able to return to their jobs. And these are men and women in every part of the country, in every industry, whether you're talking about law enforcement or fire departments or teachers or doctors or lawyers or
our mechanics,
municipal workers,
or computer, anything.
And these folks deserve the greatest respect and honor, and the best way we can do that is by giving their working families the security that they deserve. One other important point about the USERRA law is that it protects everyone who's served or intends to serve from discrimination based on their military service or status. So it's not just a matter of being reemployed after serving. They can't say, for instance, we love to hire you, but you're probably going to have to do weekend drills in the Guard or the Reserve. So I'm sorry, we can't hire you. That would be unlawful discrimination. That actually happened to a client of mine, Vanessa Munoz, who was fired by a military contractor because she took too much leave in the first place. And then when she went on her next job interview, they said, "Well, we'd love to hire you, but you're in the Guard because you're in the military. But your military obligations are going to prevent us from hiring you." And if you think about it, It's not all that different than if someone were to go on a job interview and they'd say, well, you're Hispanic. We'd love to hire you because, you know, we care about diversity, but, you know, you're going to have, you might have to go to some sort of, you know, national conference for some, you know, a La Raza conference. So we're not going to hire you. It's, you know, it makes no sense and it's unlawful, but it happens all the time. And it it really hurts the morale of our troops. If they face this kind of discrimination.
Wow. And, you know, I wonder if people know that they have these rights, you know, because I know I didn't. I knew you couldn't fire people, but I didn't know they had all these other rights. This is wonderful. Okay, we have to take a break. And when we come back, I want you to tell us what's happening in that area and then go on to talk about other cases that you've had that impact so many people, okay?
Sounds great.
We'll be right back. We have to take a break.
1450 WOL, where information is power.
Hey, listen, next time you're hungry, stop by Tori's Restaurant. That's right, Northwest V Street and J Avenue, right across the street from Howard University Hospital. Tori's Restaurant. Tori's Restaurant. Now, if you like good food, then this is where you need to be. Tori's Restaurant. They got breakfast all day, low country cuisine, also lump crab cakes, short ribs, and a whole lot more. And they got this daily special. Mondays, Ask the Chef Day. Wednesday, beef liver with onions and gravy. Thursday, meatloaf with gravy. Friday, fried whiting with hush puppies. Two sides, bread, iced tea, lemonade, or mix. Ask about our catering service, too. Call ahead for carryout. 202-462-3700. Tori's Restaurant, 700 V Street at Georgia Avenue, Northwest D.C. Right in front of Howard University Hospital. That's Tori's Restaurant, 202-462-3700.
Men, if you're like me, you appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade. The sort of shave that cuts clean, without the burn. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack, when you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price? And if saving money and a clean shave isn't incentive enough, Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, three of their world-famous blades, and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping, as always, will also give you $5 off your first order. Our way of saying thank you for trying us. How to save you, give you the best shave you'll ever enjoy? By owning the factory that manufactures them. That's how. So go to Harry's.com right now and enter code 9966 at checkout. That's Harry's.com, code 9966.
News Talk 1450 WOL, Washington, D.C., a Radio 1 station, and worldwide at WOLDCNews.com.
We're having a very informative conversation with Attorney Peter Freeman of the Lawyers Washington Lawyers Committee. We want you to be a part of the conversation. So we're talking right now about the law as it applies to military people who are serving in the military, either voluntarily or involuntarily, and their rights vis-a-vis their jobs to when they return, the benefits that they're entitled to, as well as the freedom from discrimination against them when they seek to be hired in other jobs. So please, we want you to be part of the conversation. So give us a call at 1-800-450-7876. 1-800-450-7876. Peter, you were telling us about the law, what the rights are of people who serve in the military, and what has been happening. Can you tell us a little bit more about specific cases that you're currently representing? I think there's one in the Ninth Circuit. And also, what are the resources for veterans or people who are facing these kinds of issues? Where can they get help and, you know, what's available to them?
Sure. So let me take it in reverse order. There are great resources for service members and veterans to get assistance. There are, of course, a lot of private lawyers, and you know, some of which are nonprofits, like the lawyers, the Washington Lawyers Committee, that work on these issues. But we have a lot of federal enforcement agencies that do terrific work under USERRA and other statutes. So, for example, if you have a USERRA complaint, you can complain to the Department of Labor, and they will assign an investigator to investigate your case to try to resolve it.
Explain what a USERRA complaint is again, just in case somebody just tuned in.
Sure. So if you're a veteran and you were denied reemployment, your job by your employer when you returned from military service, or you were discriminated against because of your status in the military or your service in the military, you can you have a right to file a federal lawsuit. But before you do that, you can turn to the Department of Labor, which will, at the federal level, which will, if you just tell them what happened, they'll investigate your complaint. There is also a Department of Defense agency called the Employer Support for the Guard Reserve, which would try to mediate your dispute for free. And if these are all free resources. And if Department of Labor feels that your case has merit and should go to court, they will refer it with a positive recommendation to the Department of Justice. And then the Department of Justice would actually be the lawyer for the veteran or the service member. And the Department of Justice and the Civil Rights Division has wonderful lawyers who bring these and represent veterans in these cases throughout the year, and have achieved some of the best results for veterans in USERRA cases.
Excellent.
You also have a right, unlike a lot of federal laws like Title VII, where you actually are required to file a charge with the EEOC before you can enforce your rights in court. The USERRA law allows you to file a case right away to vindicate your rights. And so if you don't want to file a complaint with the Department of Labor, you don't have to. You can come to a lawyer like me and file a federal lawsuit, or in some cases file in state court under the law. And so, you know, in that way, you would have a federal judge hearing your dispute, determining your rights. Unfortunately, and this kind of goes to one of the cases you asked about, there is a big problem right now for workers in every industry. It's not just veterans or service members, but employers throughout the country tend to require their workers to sign arbitration agreements. And these arbitration agreements require you to forego and waive all of your rights to proceed in federal court or state court, and require you to instead bring your dispute, bring your claim in a private arbitration setting where you have far fewer rights and often far fewer remedies as well. And this is an issue that has been litigated under many of the federal civil rights laws. But right now there is an open question where the courts have reached different conclusions about whether the USERRA law for veterans and service members bans forced arbitration, bans employers from forcing their workers to arbitrate their disputes. The Fifth and the Sixth Circuits have held that the law does not prohibit forced arbitration. The Federal Circuit, which deals with federal employees, has said that employers cannot force their workers to arbitrate their USERRA claims. The Ninth Circuit, which is covers the Western states, has never decided this question, and I recently briefed this issue before the Ninth Circuit, and we'll have an oral argument hopefully in the next year where we'll be able to get the Ninth Circuit to decide whether veterans and service members have a right to enforce their rights in federal court, or whether they can be forced to arbitrate their disputes. Incidentally, the underlying facts of the case are really appalling. The plaintiff in this case, Lieutenant Kevin Ziober, was about to deploy to Afghanistan for over a year, and he gave his employer every bit of notice he could that he was going to be deployed 2 months in advance. And on the last day before Kevin was about to be sent off to Afghanistan, his employer had a party where everyone in the entire office came in. They had cake, they had balloons, a card. People said nice things about him, including the boss. And then at 4:45, as he was about to leave the office for the last time to go to war, he was brought in by his boss into the HR office. With a lawyer standing by, they fired him. They said, "We think that our contract with HUD may expire in the next few months. And so as a precaution, we're just going to fire you." Of course, the contract with HUD never ended. And he was, no one else was fired.
And
when he came back,
he didn't have a job. Oh, that's awful.
It's terrible, yeah. And it's illegal. And unfortunately, when I wasn't representing Kevin at the time, but when he went and filed his case in federal court, the federal judge said that because he had signed an arbitration agreement, he had no right to enforce his rights in court, and he would have to go before a private arbitrator where he would confidentially resolve his dispute. And, you know, these are public rights, public benefits, and in fact, the Supreme Court in 1957 said that veterans and service members cannot be compelled to arbitrate their reemployment rights. And so this is an issue where we believe the Supreme Court has already spoken on when dealing with a prior version of the law. And it's about time that all of the federal courts, and if we need to go to the Supreme Court, we will, that they recognize that service members don't have to go and enforce their rights in private. And I would say this is particularly true where the employer was a federal contractor that received millions and millions of dollars of our taxpayer dollars from HUD, from the Housing and Urban Development Department. They're using our tax dollars to discriminate. It's wrong, not just when they do it on the basis of race or sex, but also if they tell our veterans, our service members, that they're fired, kind of like Donald Trump would tell them, because of their service.
You know where he's coming from. Yeah, you know exactly where he's coming from. Let me give out your information for the Washington Lawyers Committee. Also, while we have a moment here, it's www.washlaw.org, and the phone number is 202-319-1000. It's excellent, excellent work that you all are doing, as well as all the other places that you've given us other resources about these kinds of cases, Peter. And again, if you have questions about this, you can call in at 1-800-450-7876. 1-800-450-7876. Tell us a little bit also, Peter, about the case that you filed against Walmart for denying health care benefits.
Sure. About a month ago, I filed a case against Walmart on behalf of a woman named Jackie Cody, who is a resident in Massachusetts and has worked for a very, very long time for Walmart. And unfortunately, for many years prior to 2014, Walmart had a policy of not providing health care benefits to the spouses of Walmart employees who had same-sex marriages, and who were married to persons of the same sex. And in 2004, Jackie married the love of her life, Dee Smithson, and at that time, it was when same-sex marriage became lawful in the state of Massachusetts. And she went to Walmart and she said, "You know, I have a spouse. We're legally married." And Walmart said, "Unfortunately, your spouse can't get health care." And it became much more important later on when Dee, Jackie's wife, lost her health care and had pre-existing conditions because she had cancer diagnosis a long time ago. But in 2012, Dee was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and they ended up spending well over $150,000 of out-of-pocket medical expenses to treat Dee's cancer. And those are bills that have never been paid and that Jackie and Dee are going to have to pay off, because they were treated differently than every other lawfully married couple at Walmart. And this was a national policy that Walmart applied to deny all gay and lesbian workers health care for their spouses. And the case that we filed jointly as co-counsel with an organization called GLAAD, Gay Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, which is one of the leading gay rights organizations in the country that brought some of the first marriage equality cases in Vermont and in Massachusetts, and recently argued the marriage equality case before the U.S. Supreme Court that was victorious. So we're really happy to be working with one of the leading gay rights organizations in the country. And we hope that we'll prevail, not just for Jackie and Dee, but for all the other working families that were impacted by this really invidious discrimination. The case is styled as a national class action, which means that anyone who was impacted by the same policy like Jackie and Dee should be able to participate in the case and get relief if we succeed. What's notable about the case, I think, is that this is one of the first big LGBT rights class actions filed in the employment sector, especially after just weeks after the marriage equality decision by the Supreme Court in the Obergefell case.
I was thinking that it would seem that the marriage equality case should have a big impact on these other cases as well.
I'm not sure that it will have a legal impact, since the law that we're using is Title VII, which doesn't necessarily deal with marriage equality. But I think the important thing about the Obergefell decision on marriage equality is it sends a strong message to the lower federal courts that they should be taking discrimination against LGBTQ people very, very seriously. And in this instance, we're actually trying to use Title VII and its ban on sex discrimination to protect LGBT Americans, which is an argument that a lot of the gay rights organizations have been trying to make for a number of years, and that I think will be more prevalent going forward as there is a struggle to fully protect LGBT Americans under our civil rights laws. Most of the states and right now federal law does not explicitly ban sexual orientation discrimination. We do have very strong arguments that the ban on sex discrimination protects LGBT Americans, because if they're denying Jackie a benefit because she's married to a woman, they are literally discriminating against her because of her sex vis-a-vis the sex of her spouse. In other words, if instead of having a wife she had a husband, she would have gotten the benefit. Likewise, this is what we would view as same-sex stereotyping or sex-based stereotyping, insofar as Walmart, when it denied these benefits, was sending and applying a stereotype that their employees who are women should be married to men, and their employees who are men should be married to women. And Jackie didn't conform with that stereotype. But and that's why, you know, under existing case law that the Supreme Court has issued, we believe that we have every right to call this sex discrimination and get an order requiring Walmart to pay millions of dollars, not just to Jackie and Dee, but to everyone in the country who is impacted.
That is very interesting. That is very, very interesting. Tell me something about the when you consider other forms of employment discrimination are inequities in the workplace. What should people do? I mean, what other forms of discrimination do you see in the place, and how should people, what should people do about that if they think they've been discriminated because of their sex, because they're a woman and they're not promoted, or because of, I mean, what other kinds of things do you see or have you seen over the years in the work that you've done as far as employment discrimination?
Sure. I'm sad to say that I've seen and the Lawyers Committee have seen every type of discrimination, whether you're talking about disability discrimination, national origin discrimination, sex, race,
religion
certainly, political discrimination, which is protected by in Washington, D.C.
What's political discrimination? What do you mean?
Well, for instance, if an employer were to say, we're not going to hire you because you're a Democrat, in Washington, D.C., that's a protected class you could file a civil rights lawsuit.
So
one thing to note is that even if federal law doesn't protect you, there often are state laws, whether you're talking about veterans' rights or other types of rights. An example which we use more in housing is D.C. And Maryland cover source of income discrimination, so that if you're trying to get housing and you're using a federally subsidized voucher, and they refuse to take the voucher, refuse to give you the apartment, that would be a violation of state or local law, whereas it would not necessarily be a violation of federal law. But to answer your question, if you feel like your employment rights have been violated, there are lots of places where you can turn. You can certainly call private lawyers, and in general, I would encourage people to call someone who is part of the National Employment Lawyers Association or a local lawyers committee that handles these issues. You can also contact and file a charge, of course, with the EEOC at the federal level, and they have offices all across the country, or state or local offices often will handle and receive charges under state and federal law as well. And one thing to keep in mind is that there is a legal difference in terms of what you should do if you feel like you're being subjected to harassment or what's called a hostile work environment. Before you can leave your job and sue if you're being harassed, you do need to complain to someone in the company, and every company that's subject to federal Title VII, which is most companies, or under state law, if they're subject to a discrimination prohibition, you would ordinarily contact someone within the company who's designated by the company to receive and deal with your claim of harassment. And that way, you preserve your rights. If they don't respond to it and you were to leave your job, you would be better protected. But once you've left your job, if you've been subjected to harassment or filed your complaint, or if you've been terminated or denied a promotion, you certainly have the right to contact the EEOC or a state office and file a charge, which will be investigated by a professional investigator. And either the government will tell you that they would like to represent you, or they'll give you what's called a right to sue letter, and you can have a lawyer and go forward and file a federal or state lawsuit.
That is good to know, because sometimes people will call me. Recently, someone called me, and they felt that they were discriminated against because they were disabled. They had worked under they have a physical disability, and that until recently they had rave. Performance reviews and so on, and they got a new boss somewhere in Northern Virginia, and all of a sudden, the reviews for the same work changed significantly, and they really felt that, although the work hadn't changed, that there was some discrimination there with respect to disability. And that's good to know where they should put something in writing with a complaint, it sounds like, before, if they were going to leave, and then two, for my listeners to know that they can, or how they should proceed. You're listening to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell on WOL 1450. You can call in at 1-800-450-7876, 1-800-450-7876. We have Attorney Peter Romer Freeman, Deputy Director of Litigation for the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Urban Affairs. Their phone number is 202-319-1000, and their website is washlaw, washlaw.org. Peter, tell us about the post-Katrina lawsuit that you brought in my wonderful town of New Orleans, which I love so dearly.
Ethel, this is Stacy. Before we go to Peter with that question, we do have a listener on the line with a question, Sally.
Oh, very good. Sally, yes. Hello. Welcome.
Hello. Yes.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, you can hear me, right?
Yes, I can. You're on the air.
All right, yes. My question is, I was going to ask about the EEOC, and I was going to also ask, I would like to ask now also about the Labor Department Wage and Hour Division, because both of those played a wonderful part with myself being an engineer and one of the few black women in the corporate America in that position. And they really came in handy. But now I don't hear many people talking about EEOC. Can you sort of expound on that, attorney?
Sure. The EEOC is an agency that's part of the federal government that was established when Congress passed Title VII of the Federal Civil Rights Act of 1964, and it has authority to receive, investigate, and prosecute all of the federal civil rights employment discrimination protections and prohibitions, and it's both in the federal government workers and private sector workers. If you're a federal government worker, it's a little bit different, the process. They actually have an administrative hearing process where you instead of having a judge, you have an administrative judge But the EEOC is oversees that entire process as well. They have hundreds of investigators, hundreds of lawyers, and right now it's run by some of the, I think, the best female civil rights lawyers. They actually have, well, they have five women now for the first time. All five of the EEOC commissioners are women, and I happen to work with two, with Jenny Yang, who's the chairman, who I work with at Cohen-Milstein, and Charlotte Burroughs, who's who is one of Senator Kennedy's longtime Judiciary Committee staffers. And both of them are very accomplished civil rights litigators themselves. And you know, it's right now they're I think not just pushing the envelope in terms of driving the law in a progressive pro civil rights way, but they're also stepping up enforcement so that whether it's an individual or it's a bigger, more systemic problem, they're really trying to step up to the task with with the resources they have.
You know, and I have a wondering, could you sign yourself off? You know, you mentioned in the beginning of the conversation that it's possible to, when you go into corporate America or something, they want you to sign away your rights. Would you sign away your rights with the EEOC or Department of Labor Wage and Hour Division?
That's a good question. There is no right that an employer has to take away your ability to file a charge. And in fact, if you look at most arbitration agreements, they actually carve out the ability of people to file a charge. So the EEOC could potentially come in and try to assist you, but what the arbitration agreement does is it prevents you in a private capacity to enforce your rights. I believe that that's the case in terms of filing a wage and hour complaint as well. And I should note, you know, the wage and hour division, while they've had some difficulty over the last over number of years confirming a leader, they do now. They also have a longtime top lawyer at the Labor Department, Patricia Smith, who has done an incredible job on enforcement, both in New York State when she was the top enforcement person there, as well as here in Washington. And so I'm really proud to say that our federal government is doing a terrific job in enforcing the law. It has limited resources, but it is really doing a lot of terrific things to help people. And you know, that way, the people who are private lawyers or nonprofit lawyers are not the only ones who are out there in the federal and state courts helping people, but your government is working for you as well.
That sounds really good, Ethel, Attorney Ethel. I'm glad to hear it. I'm going to hang up now and continue listening, but I'm glad that our country, the government, is doing such a good job. And the attorney also, because he's getting some big bucks. He's a smart lawyer. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Sally.
You very much. And it is encouraging, but one of the focuses that I do want to start working with is letting people know how very important it is to vote, because our government is doing such a good job because we have an administration that cares. And if we don't vote, we could very easily get an administration that does not care and will strip the EEOC and other agencies of people who will be able to fight vigorously on behalf of our citizens to protect their rights. So it's important, if you are listening to this, to make sure that you get out and vote, and that everybody you know gets out and vote, and that we counter any old, you know, discussion in our discussions that we have that it doesn't make any difference and there's nobody to vote for, and it does make a huge difference. So I just had to put that plug in there. I really did.
And Ethel, if I can make one plug on that, I think it's up to all the lawyers, not just civil rights lawyers, but every lawyer in this country who believes in equality and justice and fairness, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, you should get out there and protect the vote. Serve as a poll watcher. Serve on a hotline like the National Lawyers Committee has done for many years to help answer calls. Whoever you're working with, help protect the vote, because if people can't be heard, then our government's not going to function very well. And there are a lot of threats, whether they're voter ID laws or they're people trying to intimidate people from voting at the local level. I saw that when I volunteered for President Obama's campaign in Ohio in 2008. and Senator Kerry's campaign in 2004. It's very real, but lawyers and protecting civil rights are a big part of the solution.
It really is. They really are. Which really brings up something else that I do want to say, and that, you know, it's the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act right now.
That's
and
right.
Congressman John Lewis is trying to remind us of that, and we have to remember 50 years ago, we have come a long way in 50 years. I mean, we've not only got a black president, but we've got all these different laws and benefits that we didn't have 50 years ago, and we could lose it. So it's important that the laws and the lawyers and every person in this country be actively involved in whatever way you can in protecting and ensuring our rights by making sure we have good politicians that we elect, and we don't elect or don't let others elect the ones that will try to push us back into the Middle Ages, like what happened after Reconstruction. I really have the feeling that that same kind of energy is moving up into the country, and we've got to counter it so that it does not happen. It really does not happen. Tell us a little bit, while we have a little bit more time, about Katrina. I really wanted to know about what you did in New Orleans with respect to the post-Katrina. What was going on there, and what was the lawsuit you brought, and what was the result?
Sure. It's great to talk to someone from New Orleans.
I love New Orleans.
I met my wife there when I was in college doing union organizing of hotel workers, but way before the storm. So I have a special place in my heart for New Orleans, in addition to all the other the folks I've worked with and represented. So within the year after Katrina, a year after the storm, Congress began passing big federal appropriations bills that were special bills to help provide resources to rebuild people's homes in New Orleans and the broader Louisiana area that had been hurt by the storm. Mm-hmm. And over $11 billion, with a B, overall, was appropriated by Congress, our tax
dollars. That's a lot of money.
And
mm-hmm.
most of that money was given by HUD, the Housing and Urban Development Department here in Washington. It was given to the state of Louisiana to, in turn, run a program called the Road Home Program, which was, and again, most of that money was given to homeowners who wanted to rebuild. And under the program, homeowners could receive up to $150,000 to rebuild, which is generous.
A lot of money in Louisiana.
A lot of money.
Anywhere, but especially in Louisiana.
The problem, though, is the formula that they adopted and that HUD approved during the Bush administration to allocate and determine people's individual grants gave people the lesser of the pre-storm market value or the cost to rebuild. So to give you an example, let's say you have a house that's going to cost $200,000 to rebuild, right? But the value of that home was only $50,000 before the storm. Your grant would start at $50,000, and then they would actually out whatever insurance you got. So let's say you had $50,000 of value, and you got $40,000 from your insurance company. The federal government will only give you $10,000 to rebuild your home.
That's ridiculous.
But if the same home was worth $200,000, the same exact home, and it cost $200,000 to rebuild, and the pre-storm market value was $200,000, and let's say you got $50,000 of insurance, you'd get a grant of $150,000 to rebuild your home. And the problem is, in New Orleans, the market value of homes is largely correlated with race because of historical discrimination and residential housing patterns. The same exact house that might be worth $50,000 in a predominantly black area might have been worth $200,000 or $300,000 in a predominantly white area. And as we all know, the predominantly black areas were actually much harder hit in New Orleans than the predominantly white areas. So it kind of added insult to injury to give people these grants. One of our class representatives in the case had over $300,000 worth of damage to his home, and he was given $1,400 to rebuild his home. Imagine looking at $300,000 of rebuilding costs and get a check for $1,400 with a and this is what really drives me nuts, is the government required that you actually rebuild the home. So and that they would take the home if you didn't rebuild. They would take back the grant if you didn't rebuild the home, notwithstanding the fact that they didn't give people the adequate resources.
Special place in for people like that.
Yeah. So what we did is we filed a federal lawsuit in Washington on behalf of the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Greater New Orleans Fair Housing Action Center, and a class of tens of thousands of African American homeowners under the Fair Housing Act. And we succeeded in getting a federal judge Judge Kennedy here in D.C. to recognize that the grant formula was discriminatory. Now, unfortunately, later on the D.C. Circuit, the Court of Appeals, reversed that decision as a preliminary matter and said you actually have to go to trial to prove that. You can't get a preliminary injunction. But in the meantime, what we were able to do was we through the preliminary injunction we got at the district court level, we got the court to hold up the program so that the remaining funds could be saved so that we could negotiate a settlement for the remaining funds to be distributed in a way that would help the people who were in lower market value areas who happen to be predominantly African Americans. And we negotiated a $62 million settlement. In addition, even before we negotiated the settlement, through some pressure on the administration that Maxine Waters and some other congresspeople and that our lawsuit provided, HUD and the state changed the formula for all low and moderate income people, which provided an additional $470 million to mostly African American homeowners, which helped scores of people throughout New Orleans and Louisiana to rebuild their homes and get back home. And we litigated that case with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, which is historically been one of the leading civil rights organizations to bring cases in the federal courts. And that certainly is one of the cases that I'm most proud of in my my brief legal career, because of how it impacted so many people and what it means for people to go back to their homes. I mean, your home is everything to so many people, and especially after what happened in Katrina, to get back to your home after being deterred by discrimination is a really wonderful thing.
And if anybody thinks that this is a post-racial society, listen to what he just finished saying. They're just a lot more clever and diabolical, and they use money to discriminate now, not just the law. So that's an important lesson to know.
Yeah, and thankfully the U.S. Supreme Court just a couple months ago upheld the ability of people of color and all people to bring what are called disparate impact claims, where you're alleging not that there was intentional discrimination, but what's called facially neutral policies that had the same effect as intentional discrimination. That's what we argued in the New Orleans case, because you can use something that's just a number or something that doesn't rely on explicitly on race, but if it has the same impact. The Supreme Court has now recognized once and for all, as Congress did when they passed the Fair Housing Act, that it's equally unlawful, it's equally harmful, and people ought to be able to go into court and enforce their rights to have housing and government programs that are free of discrimination.
Excellent. Well, Peter, thank you so much for coming on to inform my audience of what lawyers are doing, that the fight for civil rights and against the forces that are legally trying to disempower people is still very much alive and well. Thank you very much for the work that you do and the Lawyers Committee does and all the different organizations that you have worked with. Can you tell us something just very briefly? It's always amazing to me how quick this hour goes. But tell us very briefly, do you have anything that you want people to know before we sign off?
Sure, and thanks again for having me and all the empowerment that you do with the show. It's really wonderful to bring on people who are working on civil rights and other areas to share information, because I think the one thing I would say is we're only as good as our clients who are courageous wonderful people who stand up for justice, whether you're talking about, you know, some of the clients I've talked about today, like Jackie Cody, who sued Walmart after being a Walmart employee for many years, or Kevin Ziober, who brought the case against the federal contractor who fired him after his party. Now, these are people who stood up for what's right. It's not, they don't always get a lot of money. They don't always get a lot of fame, but they're the people who we need and we really honor in our country, because they're the ones who are pioneers for justice, just like you know, the children in Brown versus Board of Ed and other cases throughout the years where real people who stood up to injustice decided that they weren't going to sit down, they weren't going to take discrimination, they were going to stand up not just for themselves but for everyone else.
Very good. And thank you for you and all the other lawyers who continue to work constantly for justice in our society, that keeps the society working and running. And to all my listeners, keep these organizations in mind when you do your wills and when you do your gifting. They could use your gifts. These are organizations that are charitable organizations that accept donations. And I encourage my listeners to support any kind of organization that is working toward the betterment of our society, because it's a constant, continual battle. It's not over with. I don't know if it'll ever be completely over with, but thank you, Peter, and all the lawyers that you work with for what you do. I really mean that, because we need it. We definitely need it. Let me give the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Urban Affairs phone number and website address again. That's 202-319-1000, and it's washlaw.org. This is Attorney Ethel Mitchell. You've been listening to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. And please tune in next week. We will have another program that impacts you and empowers you. Have a good week, and I will be back next week. Goodbye.
WOL Washington, WPRS HD2 Waldorf, WKYS HD2 Washington, WMNJ HD2 Bethesda, a Radio 1 station, and worldwide at WOLDCNews.com.
Let's go inside the mind of a 10-year-old.
I should have worn those earrings today. I like those earrings. Gabby has those awesome earrings. I need to ask her where she got those, but that's just what she would want me to do. I'll have Michaela ask her for me.
Buckle up, Sarah.
Yeah, but then Michaela will be like, why don't you just ask her yourself? That's just like Michaela.
Sarah, buckle up.
Michaela's such a great name. I wish I was called Michaela. There's like a dozen Sarahs in my class.
Hey, we're not hitting the road until you buckle up, honey.
Oh yeah, seatbelt. I forget sometimes because my brain is like busy, you know? I wonder if there's pizza at school today.
Sometimes it can be tough to get through to your kids, but it's not impossible. Always make sure they're wearing their seatbelts, even on short drives. Remember, you have the keys, you have the power. Never give up until they buckle up. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council. Visit safercar.gov/kidsbuckleup for more information.
You wanted to see me?
Yes, please, have a seat. So here's the thing. When this company brought you on, we took a chance on you. You didn't have that 4-year college degree we typically look for.
Right.
But we gave you a shot anyway. And since then, you've worked incredibly hard and given it your all.
Thanks.
You've been an important asset to the team, but I don't think you can be an intern here anymore. We want to hire you.
You're serious?
Absolutely.
Find your next great employee. Introduce yourself to the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
I won't let you down.
I know.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Blue is my favorite color. What's yours?
What's yours?
Red is my favorite color. What's yours?
What's yours? What's your favorite color? Tell us, please.
Kids will spend 20 minutes listening to songs like
What's
this.
What's your favorite color? Tell us, please. What's your favorite color? What's your favorite color? What's your favorite color? What's your favorite?
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes twice a day. They have the time. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Fillets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction, but where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? But everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
WOL Washington, WPRS HD2 Waldorf, WKYS HD2 Washington, WMNJ HD2 Bethesda, a Radio 1 station, and worldwide at WOLDCNews.com.
The views and opinions of the following show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of News Talk 1450 WOL, Radio 1 Incorporated, or their management.
Keeping up with the Joneses, we are live in our WL downtown studio. It is August 8th, 2015. We are happy to have you here listening with us. We and I are in the studio, 1-800-450-7876, 1-800-450-7876. All can call. We want to talk to you. Today we're going to actually switch it up. You know, many times we talk about, you know, the problems and things like that, but let's talk really strategy and the strategies that you may not even see what's going on. There's a couple, you know, and it's based on, I'm sure most of us have seen or have heard about the debate. And it was a big debate. What was it? 12? It was about 12 candidates.
No, 17.
17.
17 candidates.
17 candidates.
Black man, white woman, Hispanic man, Indian man, they got everybody.
The Republicans are making a run this year. Because we're the Democrats, the Democrats.
We got old Hillary. Old Hillary.
Who maybe will get the, FBI, not maybe, but she has a strong opportunity to get the contention.
The federal investigators and open the criminal investigation.
So actually she can go to jail off of this.
Well, they locked Petraeus up, General Petraeus.
They did lock General Petraeus up.
That's for the same thing. I mean, and he's a good man, and they had to,
And it's the same, so it's the
same thing, right. You can't take these documents on with you and act like they belong to you.
But they might just hold this over her head for a while like they did Mayor Gray in D.C. for the last mayoral race. They'll hold something over your head where they're not sure, then they'll never bring it.
Well, they got a long time to do that, so they can stretch it out. But, I mean, I don't think they want to get to the bottom because there's a lot of stuff, you know, just, you know.
Because it's a thumb.